You know, we in Israel have certain basic values, and as Jews, we've always had these values through our history. That's how we survived 2,000 years in exile, scattered around the world, because we valued the traditional family. We understood that a mother and a father and children are the basic American family, basic traditional family, basic Israeli family, and that when those two parents work together and complement each other with an E, that has the potential of bringing a very strong family life.
One of the biggest things that are, I guess, getting missed right now in the United States are the various bits of turmoil that are happening in Israel. I have been asked questions so many times regarding the elections, regarding what's happening with Iran, regarding what's happening just with the people in general. And there doesn't seem to be very much being addressed, not just by mainstream media, but even by the United States government. It is very concerning. Our next guest is a former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. He's also the author of 7 books, including his latest, Confronting Radicals, What America Can Learn from Israel. He's the founder and president of Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, established after he and his then 3-year-old son were wounded in a terror attack. He can be found at davidrubinisrael.com, as well as shilohisraelchildren.org. And that gives away the surprise. Our next guest that joining us today is Mr. David Rubin. David, welcome back. And how have you been, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you. Good to be with you, JD.
You know, I don't know if you recall, but the last time I had you on, I asked you for a prediction about the election, and you nailed it. You said that Netanyahu would likely get a plurality, that they would have the most, but you weren't sure if he would be able to get to the 61 mark, and that seems to be where we stand now. I want to definitely talk about Iran and some of the other things that are happening, but can you give us just a quick update on where we stand with the formation of a new government?
Oh, sure. The negotiations are happening right now. It looks like Netanyahu has a very good chance of, I would say, like a 75% chance of putting together a coalition of 59, and he needs that 61. He needs two more members of the Israeli parliament, and it's a very open question whether he's going to get that.
Now, what happens? So do you think that Rivlin will push for, give the mandate to someone else, or will they just push for a new election? What happens if the deadline comes and goes, which is approximately 2 weeks away?
Well, yes, he does have those 2 weeks. Look, I don't think Netanyahu is going to let those 2 weeks go without doing something. You know, he always manages to pull a rabbit out of his hat, unless he thinks that going to new elections is a good option for him. I don't think he does. So, you know, he doesn't want that. He wants to remain in office, and he wants to, you know, he'd like to have that corruption trial go away. And, you know, one way of doing that would be to announce his candidacy for president, not for prime minister. You know, as you know, Israel has a president. And the president is not the head of state. It's not the person who runs the government. But he has an important role to play as the prime diplomat for the country. And as we know, Netanyahu has been an excellent diplomat for Israel. So, you know, if he runs for president, then that position, you know, the current president, Reuven Ribbon's term will be up in another 2 months or so. So the timing couldn't be better. Netanyahu could run for president. he would have all the honor and all the dignity as president, and you know, stature certainly. But he just wouldn't be prime minister anymore. He wouldn't be running the wheels of government, but he would be sort of overseeing it. And that is a very strong possibility. He could definitely get a majority of the Knesset members to support it. And there's not a small amount of talk about this possibility actually coming to fruition. The other good side from his perspective is that it would push off his trial, because a president cannot be going through a trial. And perhaps he would even get a pardon from the current president, who's allowed to give pardons.
That is, for us in America, we think that our political system is very complicated. We have, generally speaking, and I do my research, but many in America have no idea how the Knesset system works. That, thank you for all that information.
Sure.
Let's talk about Iran. That is the that's a big topic. You know, we had, it's assumed, and I didn't take an update yesterday, but we assumed that that Mossad has took out the and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, the Natanz nuclear facility in Iran. They sabotaged it. This is, of course, the same nuclear facility that was taken out a decade ago through Stuxnet, and now it appears that this has happened again. Whether it has or not, Iran is definitely blaming Israel and vows a counterattack. Why did Israel do this?
Well, all you have to do is look at what's happening in Natanz. Okay, there. Look, it's the according to the Iran nuclear deal, it's the only place, it's the only one of the Iran nuclear sites where they are permitted to do nuclear enrichment, uranium enrichment, which, for those of your viewers who don't know, is only for the purpose of getting a nuclear bomb. No, there's no reason to enrich uranium up to high levels unless you want a nuclear bomb. So it's obvious that that's what they had in mind. That's what they're up to. And surprise, surprise, Israel is not a part of the nuclear deal. Israel never signed that Iran nuclear deal. Israel was never asked to sign that Iran nuclear deal. So we're under no obligation. And if we decide that it's in our interest to stop them from enriching uranium, well, we're going to go ahead and do it. This was a remarkable attack because, true, it only stopped things temporarily, but what it did was it went 50 meters underground, because they keep their research facilities underground to protect them from attack. Israel devastated that facility 50 meters underground and pushed off their nuclear development by, it's estimated, about 9 months.
And that's what I assume, you know, that's if they are allowed to continue and enrich the uranium the way they had planned to. They were talking about 60%, and then they're obviously they have to push to a higher threshold than that to get nukes, but who's counting if they're not letting anybody in anyway, right? The Biden team has been reaching out to Iran, trying to cut a deal, trying to reach some kind of compromise that will allow the United States to reenter Obama's and Kerry's disastrous 2015 deal. Is that a good idea?
No, it's a very bad idea. Yeah. You mentioned earlier my new book, Confronting Radicals, What America Can Learn from Israel. One thing that America can learn from Israel, and that Israel has learned from its own mistakes, is that you do not appease radicals. You know, we should have known it as the Jewish people, as a Jewish nation. We should have known it from World War II, when Neville Chamberlain went running to meet with Adolf Hitler and offered him the Sudetenland as a little gesture, goodwill gesture, as they like to call it. And we know what happened after that. We know what Adolf Hitler did. He basically took over, you know, majority of Europe. That's not the right approach. Appeasing radicals doesn't work. It didn't work in Israel when we tried to appease the Palestinians for a couple of decades, offering them this, offering them that, giving them goodwill gestures, all kinds of nonsense like that, and giving them a promise that the promise of the hope of having their own independent state in the heartland of Israel, in the mountains overlooking Israel's one international airport. Absolutely insane to appease terrorists. And that is one thing that America can learn from Israel. You do not appease those who are trying to kill you. You do not appease those who are trying to tear down national monuments to American heroes. You do not appease those who are assaulting policemen and policewomen. You do not appease those who are burning government buildings and throwing Molotov cocktails, those homemade firebombs that they use in Israel against the Israeli authorities. You do not appease so-called peaceful protesters who are throwing those things at the police. So appeasement does not work. It's a very important lesson to learn. And the Biden administration has not learned it. I'm sorry to say, they have not learned it. They are still trying to appease. They just announced that they're going to give $290 million to the Palestinian Authority, even though the Palestinian Authority is still giving monthly salaries to every terrorist who kills or wounds an Israeli or an American. You don't appease people like that, because appeasement does not work. And the same with the Iran deal. You do not appease the Ayatollahs in Iran. You do not appease those who are shouting death to Israel and death to America. You give them an inch, they will take a mile.
They have demonstrated that throughout the history. And it does blow me away, because it makes me wonder, is this administration here in the United States, are they just dumb, or do they not care? Or what I think is the most likely scenario, is this kind of what they want? Are they wanting a nuclear Iran? Are they wanting an Iran that will disrupt not just Israel, but the entirety of the Middle East, including other allies to the United States, such as Saudi Arabia? Is this part of the plan? I think to understand that, we would have to look at, you know, really the differences. And you've written a book in the past, you know, regarding President Trump. Now that you've seen basically 3 months of Joe Biden, what differences have you seen between Trump's handling of the Middle East and Iran and Israel and Joe Biden's handling of the Middle East and Iran and Israel?
Sure. Quite a difference. And of course, you're referring to my book, Trump and the Jews.
I am.
Yes. And the differences are tremendous between the two. There is the approach that I just outlined of appeasing the terrorists, of appeasing those who want to destroy Israel, of appeasing those who want to destroy the United States. Appeasement does not work. And that's the Biden approach. It's the Biden, shall we say, the Biden-Harris approach? No, I don't think we could even say that. We can say the Biden approach, because Harris really is proving herself to be quite the nothing. She prefers to make these pit stops at the, 7-Elevens and things like that, where she can talk about COVID. But when it comes to protecting the borders of the United States, which she was given the task of doing, she doesn't seem to care much about it. She just gives that ridiculous laugh when asked. So as far as who's running the show, I don't know. Maybe Obama. Could be that Obama behind the scenes is promoting this appeasement approach. President Trump had nothing to do with that. He did not accept the whole concept of appeasing America's enemies. of appeasing those who were trying to do America harm. And he undid that very strongly. Unfortunately, Biden has turned it around. And I don't think Biden and or the people who are controlling him really care that much about whether it's hurting the United States to have this policy of appeasement and pandering to those who do not wish the United States well.
100% agree. We're on with David Rubin, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, and the author of 7 books. I want to talk about your latest book real quick. But before we do that, I want to make sure that everybody understands how to get it. You know, what's the easiest way? Is it on Amazon? Do they go to your website? If somebody wants to get this book, Confronting Radicals, What America Can Learn from Israel, where do they get this book?
Okay, well, of course, they could go to any bookstores and just order it through the bookstores, Barnes & Noble and, you know, others. They can go onto Amazon and just type in the words Confronting Radicals, What America Can Learn from Israel. And so they'll get to it right away on Amazon by putting in the title. And of course, they can go to my website, which is davidrubinisrael.com. That's David Rubin, R-U-B-I-N, davidrubinisrael.com. And they just go to the book page. They can find out about Confronting Radicals, What America Can Learn from Israel, plus my other books, Trump and the Jews, and all the others.
Wonderful. So my last question for you, with the time that we have left, I want you to tell us something that we need to know. Tell us something that, you know, what can we, you know, something from your book, what can we as Americans learn from Israel?
Well, it's much bigger than one question, but I guess we're teasing.
We're trying to get people to buy the book. So give us one of the good answers, and then they'll have to buy the book for the rest of the answers.
Yeah, I can't give them all the answers. That wouldn't be fair to them. They want to read it in the book. So we could focus on one particular issue that's a very important issue that we in Israel have learned well about. And that is that the American family, the traditional family, is very important. We in Israel have certain basic values. And as Jews, we've always had these values through our history. That's how we survived 2,000 years in exile, scattered around the world, because we valued the traditional family. We understood that a mother and a father and children are the basic American family, basic traditional family, basic Israeli family, and that When those two parents work together and complement each other with an E, that has the potential of bringing a very strong family life. We also believe in having a day of rest. We believe in the Sabbath. That there is a day, and frankly, you know, if you're not Jews, it doesn't matter what day it is. You know, you could do it on Sunday, but the point is that you have a day when the family is together, when you're just together with the family, when you turn off the cell phones and the televisions and the radio and the radios and the computers, and you just focus on each other, and you learn some lessons about, some biblical lessons about how the world works and how people can make themselves better individuals and be more caring and loving to each other. And, you know, that's a very important lesson, I think, that Western society needs to learn from. And if you know, obviously we were talking earlier in the show about appeasement and how to deal with domestic terrorists as well as the terrorists that we have to deal with. And, you know, that those are also important lessons. But at the same time, we have to understand that it all comes down to the grassroots. It all comes down to that focus on family, education, God, and hard work. Those are the values that help to release those creative juices and make a real free market society work.
That is excellent advice, and that is a perfect place to end. Thank you, Mr. David Rubin. People, check out davidrubinisrael.com. That's R-U-B-I-N. davidrubinisrael.com. Buy his books and check him out. This is his third time here, and I hope that you're willing to come back for a fourth time very soon, especially after we figure out what's happening with all this election stuff down in Israel. Will you come back on with me, David?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to return.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And God bless you, sir.
And thank you. God bless you.